Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Really interesting conversation with Sarah Carter. We go over the Epstein bombshell, Ghislaine Maxwell, the bombing in Beirut, and so much more. Please consider supporting our program at charliekirk.com/support. That is charliekirk.com/support. Email me your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA, tpusa.com, the nation's largest student movement dedicated to saving America. Sarah Carter is here. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this special episode of The Charlie Kirk Show that we are cross-posting on the amazing Sarah Carter podcast as well. Sarah is a dear friend and also an honorary board member at Turning Point USA. Sarah, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show.
It's so great to be on with you, Charlie, and it's great to be a board member of such an incredible organization. And the fact that you guys are growing and growing and growing is, I mean, it's awesome. It's a tribute to you and what you've been able to do.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. And we had a lot of fun the other night on Steve Hilton on Fox News. And that was fun as always. So I turned on my television this morning, and I think Cersei Lannister was in Beirut and decided to blow up the entire city. What is going on in Beirut? And what do you know? You've covered the Middle East extensively. Let's start there.
Well, I got to tell you, at first, my first impression, and I saw it, you know, as immediately as it happened, it came across my Twitter feed because I'm constantly following reporters who are in the region. As you know, I live there, Charlie. I grew up in Saudi Arabia. My father worked for an American company there when I was a kid. So I spent a good majority of my life in the region and then later went back and covered terrorism, both in Iraq and Afghanistan. So the first thing that goes through my mind when I see this explosion, which was so massive, I mean, it looked like it did. You had said before we got on, it looked like an A-bomb or something. It did. It looked like something we had seen in Hiroshima or something, this big mushroom cloud. And then the dark part of the cloud, I thought to myself, this is a huge bomb. And, you know, I was at first it brought back really terrible memories of when I was in Afghanistan. I believe it was around 2009. There was a bombing of a VBID. It was a vehicle-borne IED explosive just less than a mile from where I was staying at the Indian Embassy in Kabul. And just this car that was packed with explosive created a bomb that was so strong that we were just under a mile away and the guest house buckled and I got blown like out of my chair in the backyard. So this was just, imagine a bomb that's not even a quarter really of the size of what happened right now in Beirut going off, right? And it having that kind of power and then the decimation afterwards, the death, the people burned, the cars, the vehicles incinerated. So my heart just dropped and I thought to myself, what could be happening right now in Beirut? Obviously, Beirut has a history. Lebanon has a history. It's a pass-through right now for a lot of Iranian and terrorist organizations. There's a lot of great people in Beirut. But remember, Beirut's a hodgepodge of so many different religions and people. And anything can happen. We've seen it before there. We saw it with the Beirut bombings in 1983 with the Marine Corps barracks, where we lost so many Marines. But right now they're reporting that the bomb, that it's probably not a bomb, that it came from a factory. It looks like a fireworks factory that's near the port. But those are just very early reports that I'm seeing. I saw those reports actually on the New York Times. So we don't know. We don't know if somebody actually planted a bomb near there or if this was just a fire that erupted into a huge explosion. We're going to have to wait. But what we do know is that, you know, hundreds of people have been injured. Dozens have been killed, and this is a really tragic situation for the people of Beirut, which actually is one of the most beautiful cities in the world, one of the most beautiful cities in the Middle East, especially early on in the 1970s. It was the Paris. It was the Paris of the Middle East.
Yeah, and they've been held hostage a lot of times by Hezbollah and Iranian-funded actors. And so hopefully the facts will keep on coming in and we'll be able to figure out exactly. I mean, I've never seen an explosion like that. It was just unbelievable, the combustion that must have been taken to make something like that happen. So let's Sarah, let's talk broadly right now about just what's happening in this presidential race. You're covering it very closely. You and I chatted about this with Steve Hilton. What do you think is the state of the race with Joe Biden and Donald Trump? Do you see similarities to 2016? What is your reporting showing of where this race is headed and what the president needs to do to secure a victory?
I'm actually a bit concerned. Obviously, right now, you know, Biden's camp is keeping Biden in the basement, right? They are not letting him out. And they're doing that for a reason, because they don't want the American public to really know what's going on with the former vice president. You know, at first, I would joke around about this. You know, he would come out and make these crazy statements about corn pop, about, you know, we saw the older videos where he's talking about the hair on his legs and the kids, and everybody's laughing, but we're playing it over and over again. We're showing that there's something obviously wrong. He doesn't always remember where he's at. He has to be told certain questions over and over again, sometimes beforehand. But the fact that they're keeping him from going public right now is very concerning to me. You know, the president is out there, his team is out there laying out what they have done over the last 4 years for this nation, which has been extraordinary up until the coronavirus epidemic hit. This is called a black swan event. And I got to tell you, Charlie, that somebody had asked me months ago. I mean, I think it was like in December or November, we were all talking. And I remember somebody telling me, oh my gosh, this presidency is roaring. It's going to be awesome. We're going to get 2020. We're going to clench it. And I said, yes, but there's always that kind of black swan event that can occur that has happened in historically to other presidents. I think this president, President Trump, has been one of the greatest presidents standing up for liberty and freedom that this nation has ever seen in modern times. He has fought the establishment and continues to fight the establishment against what is unprecedented and mounting attacks against him and against his team. It's unheard of what we've seen from the Russia hoax up until right now. But you asked me a really important question. You said, what is it going to take? We need to lay out those policy plans for the American people. The American people have to understand and know that this president is going to lead us through this epidemic as the top general, as the top chief, commander in chief. We need everybody in the administration on the same team, on board to win this election. And, you know, for those outliers and people that are, you know, the Republican establishment, the rhinos, those that I don't really consider Republicans anymore. I don't believe they are conservatives. I actually truly believe they are part of the Democratic strategy. For any conservative that thinks that voting for Joe Biden is going to be a victory for America, they are sadly mistaken. It is a choice between American principles and freedom and liberty and Marxism, because it's not Joe Biden that's going to be president of these United States of America. It's going to be Susan Rice with the Obama agenda if she gets selected. It's going to be AOC, Ilhan Omar, the Rashida Tlaibs, the extremists, the people that we've seen on the streets rioting that the Joe Biden campaign cowers to. It's not about law and order. It's going to fundamentally change our country. And that's what scares me. These last days have to be taken as seriously as any day in this campaign. Nobody should just sit back and say, oh, it's going to be a shoo-in. This should be a fight to the finish. And the message should be heard loud and clear in all of the swing states and all across America.
Who do you think that Joe Biden is going to select for vice president?
Susan Rice. I've been saying that. I do. I mean, I could be completely wrong. Right? I could be, because I don't have a magic ball. I'm just throwing it. You asked me. I've been telling people this now for 4 months. For 4 months, I've been saying this because, look, If he, even you know, Congresswoman Bass, they threw her name out there. I mean, what a joke. I mean, there's no way. Because first of all, she can't even really explain why she supported Fidel Castro, right? And the Castro regime in Cuba. She's not very well read then on her foreign policy if she can't explain that. He's a socialist, a Marxist. A lot of Cuban people died trying to come to America, you know, to escape Fidel's tyrannical government and socialist government. I think there's other people that are going to be just way too controversial. Kamala Harris is one of them. I don't think that, you know, her platform, her past history, particularly as a prosecutor, is going to do well with the Black community. But look, someone like Susan Rice, who has been, she covers all bases. He wanted a woman. He wanted a woman of color. She understands the administration. She'll come in with guns a-roaring, right? She was pretty much right there beside President Obama the entire time. And what do the Democrats want more than anything? Obama's former team. This includes former CIA Director John Brennan, who lied before Congress, Clapper, James Comey, all of them. They want retribution. They want to take back America for themselves. And Susan Rice would be the one to do it. She would be the one to bring back the Iran deal, implement that Iran deal again, keep that legacy, Obama legacy going, this failed legacy, foreign policy legacy. And by the way, she would really make America lead from behind, because that's their policy. They just don't see America as exceptional. It falls right into their platform. And I think with Joe Biden being kind of like a puppet for them, it would be like the perfect storm if he wins.
So, Sarah, can you walk us through as well, do you think there are going to be prosecutions by John Durham?
Oh, you know what, Charlie? Yes, I think I absolutely hope so, because this will be the fear, right? I believe in John Durham. I believe he's an honest broker. I also want to believe that Attorney General William Barr is an honest broker, that they're going to do the right thing, and that they are going to, because it's their legacy. You know, I just talked a second ago about what Obama's legacy was and what he wanted it to be. And it's been thankfully turned upside down in its head by President Trump and his team. But for Barr and for Durham, their legacy in American history would be to restore justice back to our nation. It would be to clean house. And that's what we need to do. No way should we allow it. And I tell this to everybody, whether you like Trump or you don't like Trump, whether you like his policies or you don't like his policies, the American people voted for President Trump. They voted for him. They put him in office. They wanted change. They wanted this president. We wanted change in America. So what happened with these intelligence agencies and federal law enforcement agencies, basically usurping our government, taking control and weaponizing the system to push out and try to coup an elected, that's what they did. I mean, it doesn't matter if somebody at the New York Times or the Washington Post or someplace else wants to write this intellectual story about how they did this for this reason or that reason. They did this to remove a president of the United States that was duly elected by the American people. And they continue to try to do that. And they continue to target him. So it is up to Barr and it is up to John Durham to right that wrong and to indict people for what they did and lay that argument out the way a great prosecutor can to the American people and say, guess what? This is exactly what happened. And now it's our choice as Americans to decide, do we want to give that all up? Do we want to give up everything our founding fathers and everything our troops have sacrificed and fought for since the beginning of this nation? Well, do we want to give that up, or do we want to clean house, move forward, put a president back in office that will defend the United States principles and our rights? Or do we want, you know, basically the puppet, which will be Joe Biden? But if Barr waits until after the elections, then I am going to be highly suspicious. And you know what? I'm not going to ever trust him again.
Are you seeing evidence that he is getting closer and closer to indictments?
Yeah, I am seeing evidence of that. I mean, we know that They have been investigating now for some time a number of people. That includes James Comey. I've already been told by my sources that Durham has done extensive interviews, actually, with Peter Strzok. He has also interviewed Joe Pienka, who is the only FBI agent still within the FBI that is, you know, right now, I think the person that nobody's heard from, the one that I keep saying over and over again for years, will Congress please call Joe Pienka to testify because he would know. Remember, he was the one that interviewed Michael Flynn along with Peter Strzok at the White House in January 2017. He was also the one that gave the defensive briefing to President Trump along with Governor Chris Christie, as well as Michael Flynn in August of 2016. And was basically collecting information during that defensive briefing. So what we know now is Kevin Kleinsmith, who falsified the FISA, Joe Pienka, Peter Strzok, James Comey, who signed off on a lot of the, you know, the FISA, basically signed off on them so that they could renew those FISAs against Carter Page. I think all of those people are under, you know, a microscope with John Durham. And remember, it goes far beyond just them. We're looking at issues that deal with John Brennan as well, because that's the reason why Attorney General Barr and Durham were in Italy. They were in London. They were interviewing intelligence officials overseas. We still don't know what happened with Joseph Mifsud. He has long since disappeared, although an Italian reporter says there's suspicions that he might be dead. Who knows? Others are saying he's still alive. But there's a lot here that John Durham needs to do. And I think those names that I gave you, including Andy McCabe, I think those names will possibly come under indictment.
Well, I hope you're right. So, Sarah, switching gears, but also under the Department of Justice, you do a lot of reporting in that kind of arena. Can you make sense of what's happening around the Epstein investigation with Ghislaine Maxwell?
Oh, my gosh. That is, to me, like one of the biggest stories that isn't getting looked at even closely enough. I feel like we still don't even have, and I know this is going to, I'm not trying to be conspiratorial, right? I'm a journalist that goes by facts. I've been in the war zone. When you see things happen, you put pieces together, like 1 + 1, you know, equals 2, right? 1 + 2 equals 3. So even with what happened with Epstein in jail and the fact that he apparently committed suicide by jumping off the second bunk. When I talked to his attorney, like several days before, that he had seemed totally fine, that he had met with him. I was speaking to David Schoen. He said, yeah, I met with Epstein. I think I'm going to work on his, you know, legal issues. And he looked totally fine. We talked to people. He told me about what happened in the, you know, in the other cell. And all of a sudden, he's dead. And now Ghislaine Maxwell, you know, is in custody. And, you know, people joke around on Twitter all over the place, Charlie, and on Instagram, like, Ghislaine Maxwell, you got to put her in like solitary and protect her and send it, because she would have those answers, right? Here's a guy that pretty much we are 100% sure was sex trafficking and peddling young girls, you know, to very wealthy, important people, including Prince Andrew, possibly, allegedly others. And there is this like fear, this wave, you know, and I've seen this in the past in smaller cases, like, you know, when you're covering local, you know, politics and someone gets caught, you know, doing something bad and everybody tries to cover up. But this is far greater. Look, I'll tell you something about Epstein that really is interesting to me. For years, he operated, he flew this plane, he was going back and forth to his island with all of these wealthy people. I worked covering intelligence, stories that dealt with the CIA, with other foreign intelligence agencies. If I was an intelligence agency overseas, or even in the United States, I would have had that plane wired, I would have had that island wired, and I would have collected information on everyone that was flying back and forth, whether or not those people committed acts that were bad or not. And that makes me very suspicious, because then that tells me if that happened, which I believe it was very possible, if that happened, then there's a lot of people that could have been manipulated and used And our security could have been at risk if some other intelligence agency outside of the United States, if it was U.S. actors or vice versa, could have been, you know, their arms could have been twisted. They could have pretty much been blackmailed for anything that they did. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. It'll be interesting to see if Ghislaine Maxwell gives up anything now in custody, and whatever that information is, I'm sure we'll be watching it very closely. And if anything happens to her, that's going to be a big question mark, I'm sure, for people. It's going to leave a lot of doubt in people's minds.
Yeah. So what do we have evidence that Bill Clinton was on the island or was on the plane? This is now hotly debated. And then, Sarah, can you clear up? I've gotten so many emails that somehow Donald Trump was looped into this, which is a complete fabrication and a lie. Can you help clarify that?
Oh, it's completely fabricated. I mean, the charges against President Trump are completely fabricated. One of the things that happens is, you know this as well as I do, Charlie, that we go to a lot of events with a lot of different people. You meet people, you say hi to them. You don't even really know who they are, or you might know who they are, but you're really not close friends with them. They're standing next to you. You take pictures with them. It doesn't mean you're best friends. It doesn't mean you were flying to an island. It doesn't mean you were, I mean, look, I know people who were asked to go to the island, right? And I'm not going to mention who were told, like, oh, you know, Epstein thinks you're brilliant. He'd love to get you out here to talk to you. You fly to his island and meet with him. People that I know that said, nah, no, I don't really, you know, nah, I don't have time or whatever. As for Bill Clinton, there's actual proof. There's actual evidence right now based on the logs that he was flying, you know, these charter planes. And now we see, you know, based on the documents themselves that have been unsealed by the courts, that there is proof. He is named in those documents, directly named in those documents, as well as others. So look, I believe that you're always innocent, right, before being proven guilty. There's always circumstances that could arise. We understand that Prince Andrew, we saw him in a picture with this young girl. So I think that the judicial thing would be to wait until it goes through the court system and to see what that evidence is. I'm, you know, like everyone, I'm very concerned. I think the worst thing that can happen to a child or to a woman or to a young boy is to be trafficked. Sex trafficking is horrific. I've covered those stories before in other countries, like in Thailand, even in the United States, in Africa, in Europe, where young women are trafficked and their lives are destroyed, and children as well. And so I want to take a moment to make sure, and I hope that the prosecutors gather all the evidence possible and take everybody they can, because it can't just be Ghislaine Maxwell, right? This is what I'm talking about. Like, even when we're dealing with Durham, we don't just want one guy. We know that, you know, that the people on the lower rungs were taking orders. I want to know who was giving the orders. I want to know who was, if there was abuse, who was abusing these children, and they should come to, you know, they should be brought to justice. And there should be justice for the people that have been harmed. But we also have to know it's the truth.
I completely agree with that.
So, Sarah, can you also make sense for our audience about Antifa? What is Antifa? Who is funding them? Because there's a lot of people out there that listen to our podcast that feel like we're under attack from within. Can you help make sense of this for us?
I actually believe that we are. I actually believe that the United States is under attack from within. And I think a lot of it, Charlie, I've got to go back to what you're doing, you know, with Turning Point USA and, you know, exposing what's happened in our universities and our colleges. And I think that for decades now, we haven't paid attention to what's happening. And we have professors in colleges and universities. We've seen it in California. We've seen it across these United States that are actively promoting and pushing Marxism and socialism and anti-American values. And they take young, impressionable people that may think that they are doing what's right based on what they've been exposed to, because they haven't had a lot of experience like I have or you or others traveling through the world and seeing what it's really like. And they're manipulated and lied to. And they have these groups. And we can see with Antifa that Antifa is not just it's not just a bunch of kids that just show up one day. Right. We're seeing that there's weapons that they organize on social media, that they have leadership. I've been talking to sources in the intelligence community, actually have worked on a number of cases where you can see groups in like Venezuela, for example, or in Cuba and in other parts of the world that are funneling money or funneling people in to support these groups. Now, that's really concerning to me. And I'm not, and that's not just a conspiracy theory. I mean, we could talk about BLM, Black Lives Matter, and the close connections between their groups' leaders and people in Venezuela. We could talk about how they espouse some of the same Marxist values that are in Cuba. And you have to think, I mean, maybe it's because I spend so much time in, you know, covering intelligence. My mind always goes to like, where, how would I use these subversive groups in the United States if I'm from a foreign country, right? How would I use them to create chaos before an election? How would I, you know, this is what's really funny. The Democrats in 2016 were so sure, oh, that President Trump was, or they believed the lie, or they just propagated the lie, that President Trump was conspiring in his campaign with Russia, and that the Russians were altering our election and putting, putting advertisements in Facebook, and they were changing American minds. Look at what's happening right now. It's right in their face, right? It's right in their face. We have Antifa rioting, taking down, destroying our cities. We have young people falling in line with groups like BLM. Look, everybody's life mattered. Black lives matter. Asian lives matter. White life. Everybody's life matter. Human life matters. It matters to me. It matters to me when it's in the womb. It matters to me when it's outside. It matters to me when it's a police officer on the street. But when you take that and you create a group that opposes American values, they're basically using this poor man, George Floyd's life, to target our nation because of a horrible tragedy. You know, and then I think about other foreign countries and how they would utilize that to sow chaos in our nation, particularly right around the time of this election, you know, come November. And we're seeing happening in our cities. There's no doubt to me. And, I hope, and I'd like to, even with my foundation, do a lot more research into where these groups originate from, where they start, be able to expose them, be able to create reports on them. I think that particularly on our side, Charlie, the conservative movement does not have enough people doing investigations and research like the left has done. But basically, the left's done with propaganda. We need to get the truth out, and we need to find out who's funding these groups, how they're being organized, and how they're being used.
I completely agree with that. So in closing, Sarah, can you give us a status update on China with the virus and how Americans should view our relationship with the Chinese Communist Party?
I think I'm right on board with you on this one, Charlie. And we've talked about this on a number of Steve's shows, and I've seen you talk about this on a number of other shows. Look, we need to be self-sufficient. You've talked about this. I've talked about this. Our nation needs to start taking care of us first, America first. We cannot afford to have the majority of our medical products, our PPEs or our antibiotics or, you know, our painkillers being made in China. That's just unacceptable. And I think what's so fascinating, what's so amazing about President Trump and about how he's handled China is that he's basically exposed how vulnerable we really are to China. And he is the only one that has been willing to hold the Chinese Communist Party responsible. I cannot believe when I watch the news, I cannot believe the gall of the Democrats when they basically say that, you know, President Trump is responsible for coronavirus. No, the Chinese Communist Party is responsible for coronavirus. We know there have been a number of problems with the Wuhan laboratories. We understand where this came from. We also know that China did not tell the world what was happening while it was happening in China. We also know that the Chinese opened their skies and allowed people to fly from Wuhan to Europe while not letting them travel throughout the rest of China and Beijing. Highly suspicious to me how the Chinese have behaved here. And we have to hold them accountable. Just like Gordon Chang has said, we cannot back down. Look at what's happened to the people of Hong Kong. Look at what's happening across the board in our nation, not just here, but in other countries where China's tentacles have reached and just basically they've grabbed hold Central America, Africa, Afghanistan, for crying out loud. Everywhere I look, I see the Chinese Communist Party and their reach. And I believe right now that China is doing everything in their power to try to fight this president, because now the Chinese government knows. The president of China knows, Xi Jinping knows that President Trump isn't going to take it anymore, that he's going to hold China accountable. And, you know, I think he is absolutely right to squeeze China, get that trade deal done, and, you know, tell the Chinese, look, it's got to be reciprocal. We're not going to sit here and allow you to do what you've done to us. And they're responsible for all these deaths. The Chinese, not us.
Well said. So, Sarah, how do people find out more about you? SarahCarter.com, no H, right? And any other projects you want to share?
I had to go SarahACarter.com, no H. You know, there's another Sarah Carter. She's a beautiful artist. You can go to her website too and get some of her paintings.
That's funny. Well,
yeah, you can also find me on Twitter at SarahCarterDC.
Well, thank you. And if anyone listening on your podcast wants to learn more, they can always listen to the Charlie Kirk Show. And, we appreciate it so much, Sarah, and thank you for everything and keep fighting. And we'd love to have you back on again soon.
Yeah, I love it. Thanks, Charlie.
You bet. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Please email me your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. Type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider. Make sure you subscribe. Give us those 5-star reviews. Screenshot yourself doing that and email it to us at freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you guys so much for listening. We got some big episodes coming up this week. Make sure you listen to our sister episode about population collapse. Thanks so much for listening. God bless.